Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, creative director and chief creative officer of Liminal Collective, Ben Portman.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Mason Lucas. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Some of us have become wise to the fact, and we've actually talked about it on this show a few times, if not many times, wise to the fact that we would be much better off and much better served if we didn't use derogatory words and phrases to ourselves or about ourselves or at ourselves, against ourselves. You know what I'm talking about when people say things like, I'm so, and add any derogatory word that fits your vocabulary, like stupid, or I'm such a, when something happens, insert word like idiot. And I'm purposefully staying away from the even stronger, more profane words. But frankly, I hear actually those very often as well. So these words used against us, they may be words in our vocabulary. They also may be words that we have heard and phrases that we have heard people use on themselves or on other people. They might even be words used against us and have been used against us, and maybe even when we were children. And so maybe those words are in our unconscious mind. So when we're saying those things, they're coming up from our unconscious mind, and we may or may not consciously believe them. But if they're in our unconscious, then probably we believe them. If they're not in our unconscious, if we keep consciously saying those words, eventually we may believe them, and then we may create a self-fulfilling prophecy wherein we potentially put ourselves in situations that we prove to ourselves that we are right, that we are all those things. So the question I have sometimes in the past I've had with some people is, I think to myself, if they have been able to achieve, in some cases, some fascinating, amazing, wonderful things as who they are, and yet they have this self-worth, or they use these kinds of words against them, I wonder what they might have been able to achieve, or what they might be able to achieve if they stop that. Or better yet, did something else that might help them. And if not better, maybe even be happier or more content or more satisfied in life. So I bring this up because there's another phrase that what I've been talking about is kind of against ourselves. But there's a phrase that includes all humans, and that is, I'm only human. Or it's always derogatory, almost always. Or I made a human mistake. Hey, I'm human. What do you expect? I'm only human. And I didn't really make that connection until reflecting upon this show and speaking with our guests and discussing with Mark and Dorothy, our executive producers, about the show. And I'm thinking, how interesting that we talk about humans when we say, I'm only human, or he's only human, or she's, that we all make mistakes, that we are inherently imperfect, and we're definitely fallible because we are human, and therefore limited in our abilities and understandings and all of that. And so, and used as an excuse, actually, for, you know, that needs to be taken into consideration. He's only human. I will say there's a part where it's sometimes referred to like, I'm human, I have emotions, or I have feelings. Okay, I get that. But the other part, and this is where I'm going with this. So I ask myself the question that if we used I'm human as praise, as opposed to only being human and not being enough, that I am human, that being human is something amazing that potentially, with all the amazing things that have happened that humans have done in this world, and still in this civilization, at least that I know of, we say we're only human. Like, what if we looked at humanity and says, wow, we're human. That is a good thing.
I was going to say we're only human, but we're no, human.
Right. See, that's my point.
I was pondering an analogy that is a little bit out there, but I'm going to try it on for size. When you were talking and describing that, I was thinking about how when you turn water to boil, when you turn a flame up to boil water, and then it reaches the boiling point, you got to keep that energy going, because if you turn the flame off, it won't continue to boil. Mm. And I was thinking about the memory. We have science now. We know that water has memory. And so therefore, every time you're using those words, it's like leaving the flame on. Mm. As you're continuing a certain vibration, or you're supporting a certain energy, and it's maintaining that constant. Mm.
And we want to have the flame on. We're human.
We're the human flame, yes.
We're
be
excited.
Even more human. We're exactly
of course
excited.
He's amazing. He's human. Of course she's amazing. Of course they're amazing. Absolutely. They're human.
Absolutely. And being even more human. And can't wait for tonight's guest, because this guy is just next level. As a person, as a teacher, as a competitor, the insights that he has to share, the experience that he has, totally next level. It's going to be an exciting conversation.
Well, that's why we've titled the episode Seizing the Moment and the Technology to Empower Humans to Be More Human. This is episode 859, and our interview guest is a former Canadian national gymnastics champion, former Cirque du Soleil head of acrobatics and creative director, and he is chief creative officer and partner at the Liminal Collective. We are happy to have Ben Potvin on the show. Welcome, Ben, to the Life Changes Show.
Thanks, Filippo. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me on your show. I'm really excited to be here with you guys.
And thanks for being human.
Aren't we all, right?
You inspired that.
No, this is great. And actually, on that topic, you know, while you're that, you know, you understand that, you know, humans, we're the most complex organism in the universe, right? So just have a pause and have a, it's like sometimes we don't even take that in consideration. We just treat each other like, oh, everybody should know the same way. Everybody should learn the same way. Everybody should be on the same page as I am. But unfortunately, we are so different, but at the same time, we're the same, right? Mm. So the subtleties and how we look at things, that's the power of the diversity in the human race, let's just say this way. And I think that's what's really exciting for us and with Liminal and with Mark and everybody onto what is actually the best version of being a human or being at your best self. And that's something that we really love and really excites us to play with and to work with people.
Is there one thing other than what you just shared, which is amazing, actually, that you could point to when somebody comes to you or your company and you say, you have this and nothing else has this? So let's start with there. When people can't think of anything that they're excited about or that they feel good about being a human.
Well, no, I think it's always fascinating. No matter who you meet, you know, when you actually take time and you listen and you hear people out and you start asking questions, I think it's fascinating the stories that people have. We all have our own journeys. We all have our own starting points and challenges and highs and lows and the cultures. And, you know, we've all had our own kind of path that we've carved. You know, by ourselves or through people with the timing. So sometimes I would just, before we even start, I would just say, you know, if you want to be a little bit better human yourself, just start by asking questions and listening to people around you as a first step. And just by that, you will open your horse blinders and be like, oh my God, I didn't see you this way, or I didn't think that you were like this, or have something in common, or have something as differences. But regardless, it creates a topic or a theme for a conversation that then together you can drive wherever you want, which is always fun.
I like that. I like that. Actually, speaking of, I like that. After you and I got off the phone in our conversation a couple of days ago, I thought of a Socrates quote or a quote that's attributed to him. That's the unexamined life is not worth living. And I felt so strongly about one particular thing you said that I took that phrase and I thought, well, the uncreative life is not worth living, maybe either. Creativity seems to be that important. I don't think we give it enough importance. So you are the creative, chief creative officer at Liminal Collective. So tell us why and how creativity is so important.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and obviously, I'm just that one piece of the puzzle, that we're constantly trying to, optimize and tweak, and to making sure that we're all challenging ourselves. Because I think as humans, you want to surround yourself with people that will challenge you, and you want to challenge them. That's the only way of progress. If not, if the relationship and the conversation are at standstill, or let's just say too balanced, well, there's no progress, there's no improvements, there's no nothing. So you need to tilt the scale one way or another to create some kind of movement or motion in order to catch your step, speed up, slow down, but at least to be in active state, right? Physically, mentally, spiritually, and socially. So at Liminal, we're a very diverse group of experience. I come in, I want to say that I've spent my last 25 years at the intersection of sport, entertainment, and storytelling, which is really fun for me because obviously I'm biased, and going from a gymnast through an artist at Cirque du Soleil O in Las Vegas, where I performed over 2,000 shows, I was lucky in a way to be surrounded by high performers and hyper creatives, and that overlap and that kind of blue sky for a moment, but at the same time, the balance between creative expression and really pushing the edge and being at your edge, but at the same time having somewhat of a structure to actually capitalize and build on specific things is the one that we're constantly playing with, because it's like a, no pun intended, it is a juggling act. So creativity, the way we look at it and how we label is, first off, a lot of people do not consider themselves creatives. They associate creativity with the creative arts, or musicians, or actors, or whoever, But the fact is, if you are anybody, if you're a single parent, a mom trying to figure out the best way to feed your kids, put them in the van, bring them to soccer, get on your call, get on the Zoom, come back, you're going to try to, that's creative. That is definitely one genre. Like, you could not do all these tasks in a row if you were not creative. You would just not happen. So we often start off with whoever we're working with, individuals, teams, organization, on just establishing of like everybody's creative. You're not necessarily gonna write the next Beatles song, but it doesn't mean that you're not creative, right? So once they've established this, and once we kind of got their attention of like, oh, I am creative. And actually, when you put it this way, I do, solve problems, which is a hint of innovation and creativity in there. So we look at creativity as, almost a skill set that you need to, especially if you're trying to problem solve or really push the innovation, or to have the edge versus everybody else on a performance level, if that makes sense.
So, for those people who are currently listening who never thought of themselves as a creative, now they could start thinking that they are creative. And that's important because.
Because that brings you to the next day, and actually it'll catalyze some different neurons cracking in your head. And I think if I look at creativity almost like an energy, right? And it's like when and it's you can't always be in it. It's impossible. Like if you're really trying to optimize something or to be really focused, I go by the fact that at some point you need to turn the intensity down, or you need to shift things so that way you can kind of recalibrate, catch a breath, and whatever that might be. And I think that's applicable to any kind of traits, and not just creativity, but any kind of skill set. But I think creativity is the fun part of it, because it's the little spark in the middle of the night that you wake up and go like, oh, what if I do it this way, right? And then so it's like a little kind of a firework in your brain, right? And then afterwards, like if you start surrounding yourself with people, and next thing you know is like, oh, well, we couldn't do it this way, but maybe we do it that way, or we can't do this, but how about that? So I love that kind of, if you want to look at analogy of like a pinball machine, because it just starts hitting things, and you can't plan specifically on, I want to be creative at this time, and I need to be creative then, and I want the, you can't do this, but the one thing that we did notice through the people and surrounding yourself with different individuals, changing your routine, changing the environment that you're in, will change your perspective. And once you change, you start changing your perspective, and then you balance that, and you sprinkle in a little bit of being in the present state, being alert, aware, have all those senses in tune with who you are, where you're at, and what's the goal. Well, typically you will generate some idea that then you can choose to either follow or to can, and that's, you know, that depending up to you and how much time and effort and what you're really into, you know. So that's very different, but the process is all pretty much the same.
Is it arguably a human characteristic or trait?
I think creativity is, I think it's part of your human DNA. Like we were all creative. I think we're born with it. Depending of where you are and where you grow up and your culture, and you know, you're gonna flex different types of creativity. But I think now, more than ever, it is a skill set that's needed for the high performance communities and for the individuals that are really trying to have the edge. If you look at across sport, across business, across organization, the ones that really push creativity and harness it and harvest it are the one on the cutting edge of, you know, making some big changes.
What comes first, according to you? Is it creativity or self-awareness? Do they both come at the same time? And how important is self-awareness?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. Obviously, self-awareness is another big thing too that we really push. Like, you know, if you want to have a competitive edge, I think the more aware that you are about yourself, your emotions, your triggers, your environment, the people you're at, then you will have an edge with the competitor that is just oblivious and is just going through the motion. If you're aware of these little micro emotions, are you in the right space? Are you in the right mindset? Did you prepare properly? Is there something that you can use? Can you pivot off some things? It's just being alert, right? So, you know, if you look at any high performers out there, they're super hyper alert of themselves, of their environment, and of the energy in the room that they read. So I think that is first. And then afterwards is, okay, creativity. Now that you're aware, typically if you're aware and you're in tune with yourself and your environment, you're going to catch on some things that you would not have caught if you would have just been on autopilot. And that is the fun factor. That is then you start, you know, chasing the rabbit, right? And you can be like, okay, where is that going? Am I supposed to be focusing here? So there's this balance, like I said at the beginning, a balance of, you know, creative expression and creative ideation and blue sky. But at some point, you need to build a structure or balance it out with, you know, something that's got a bit of discipline, so that way you can really use what your thought was and then put it into action, and therefore, you know, making something out of it versus just thinking about it, dreaming about it, and just staying in that state, right? So that you need to, there needs to be a transition. And I believe that we believe that there needs to be, once you've kind of ideated, you need to start thinking of a plan to do it. But at the same time, then be aware, be alert, be in tune with your process, and allow that creativity to kind of sprinkle in throughout this process. It's not because you have an idea now that you have a plan and you're starting to working on your service or your product that you need to, that, you know, all the fun is out and it's just on the guide rails are on and we're going. That's one way of doing it. But for again, for the people that are on the cutting edge, and pushing the envelope as far as innovation and high performance, is a team that dreams big, are able to catalyze the thought, the idea, put it into some kind of process, and then constantly, flexing and checking the creativity throughout this process to making sure that they're not, nothing's falling through the crack, and then a good opportunity or a good timing or a new idea, can't come to play a major part into that service and really giving it the edge versus somebody else.
You mentioned the mom at the beginning of the show taking feeding their kids and putting them in the van, taking them to soccer practice, et cetera. And so just holding on to that for a second, you come from having trained gymnastically and taken it to champ to becoming a champion. And so people are watching you, people are judging you, and people are giving you points and kudos when you're doing well. And then you go on to Cirque du Soleil, and then you not only get hired, but you get promoted and people applaud you, 2,000 shows and however many thousands of others things that you've done that people applauded you. For the mother who doesn't get an applause, who doesn't get points for having been creative in this way today, and nobody else saw it. But had she not been able to do that, then their kid wouldn't have gone to soccer, the kid would have cried or not been happy or whatever the situation is. How the mother saved the day without somebody else recognizing it. How does she, how do people find that recognition within themselves to say, I was creative, to be self-aware and give themselves those kudos.
Well, yeah, that's a good question, and it's really hard because obviously not everybody sees all the work that goes into to every little things that people are doing day to day to make sure that they have food on the table and make sure that the kids are properly dressed and going through their curriculum and doing their sports and have bedtime stories. So it's hard to do that, but I believe you don't. We don't all do it to get your to get the high fives and to say, hey, that person, you did it. I think that has to be that kind of self-reflection and self-award that you're at the end of the night to say, have that little moment. Have that little moment of reflection, whether it's journaling to say, okay, cool. Because I think the best culture is a culture of winning and learning, not winning and losing, right? So even if you have a bad day, you can still learn from that. So that doesn't happen over and over again. But what typically happens is that people just focus on the negative and then they just brush it off. And the next day they do the same thing and the same thing happens again and so on and so forth. It takes a little bit, long for them to catch the fact that something needs to change if they want to have different results. But regardless of that, I think this, what's really helpful is I think this, it would be just this self journaling at the end of the day. Like, what did I do today? And then start connecting the dots. And then you will see, I think you'll have that epiphany by yourself saying, oh my God, I actually did do this, and if I wouldn't have done that, that wouldn't have happened. And then you start thinking. So then you're shifting your mindset because an emotion, we're all humans, right? So we're all driven by emotion because emotion impacts your behavior. Your behavior impacts your mindset impacts your performance, right? So if you kind of look at it this way and you distill it, in these fractions, have a little think of how was your day? And that can be done, at lunch, it can be done at night, it can be done in the morning even. How was that yesterday? But it's important that every person has that little reflection time because that will bring them in the present. It will be the self-analyzation of how would they were as a performer, as performance, if you want to look at performance or just how was your day was. And then that could definitely help. How do they want to line up the next few moves in order to kind of keep on that train of, hey, I'm getting a little bit better every day. I'm getting 1% better, 5% better. And then at some point, somebody's going to recognize and give them that trophy or give them that pat of the back and say, oh my God, I've been noticing you, all the stuff you've been doing. You're a super mom or a super dad or a super brother or super sister, right? So, because the one thing that I always teach in our sessions that we call them, who are you, right? Is basically it's self-awareness 101. And as that's done through improvisation and acting scenarios. And we do a lot of movement stuff. But the four things that I believe, there might be more, but if the four foundations that connect us on humans, as humans, as you started the show with, right? No matter your age, your race, your culture. Is food, movement, music, and stories. If any of these get together, it doesn't matter if you speak the same language or if you don't, I guarantee you. We've worked with teams that have to, let's just say, accelerate the team building ASAP because either a show's got to go on or the choreography's got to change and stuff. And that has been those few things. You get people in a room and you get some food and you get some music and then people start to dance and then a story start to come in and then people start to connect. Oh, I did this too. Oh, that's different than me, but we do it here. And next thing you know, people are talking to one another, sharing insights, sharing stories. And that's one thing that if we want to become more human, and I think we live now in a world where technology is doing so much, and there's no way we're going to catch on technology. That is on a light speed train. So what it does, one thing that you can look at it can be scary for sure, but just think about all the stuff that technology can do for you now that gives you that little extra time to be a little bit more human and start sharing your stories with your friends, with your kids, with your family, around dinner, around a fire pit, in a car ride. Stories change the world, and that makes us humans.
So when I think of stories, I think of vulnerability.
Oh, yes. Vulnerability is, the way we look at it too, it's an accelerator to trust, right? It's a performance multiplier. It's courage in action because it is tough to share some vulnerable stories. The sooner you do that, then the other end feels, and if it's authentic, if it's the right time and the place, obviously I'm not saying to do this, just
And the
before
right people,
in the right people,
yeah.
but it is such an accelerator for if you're looking for accelerating team building, sharing some moments because again, we all go through highs and we all go through lows, and we might think it's very, very different. But if you start, seeding in some of your stories in the right way, the right manner, you will realize that that is going to be definitely a glue with your team, and people will know you better. And I think that especially as you're trying to work with teams, that's one thing that's neglected in a lot of these organizations is you're hired for your skills. You're put in your place very quickly to operate, optimize, produce, results. But there's a big gap there where if people would start spending a bit more time together on the front end, either as on onboarding or putting these, hey, let's just go do something outside together. It could be a walk in nature, it could be a sport, fun sport. And then you catalyze that, and if you bring in some food components, some kind of fun movement, some stories, and some music, people will open up and will share vulnerable moments, great moments, sad moments, and the next thing you know, well, you're a little bit more connected on the hip with your partner, with your teammate, with your manager, whoever that might be. So that is that, we love vulnerability. It is tough to start with. But if it's curated properly, again, it's an accelerator of trust.
It seems to be such an expensive investment, that time that's needed to do that. But you're saying the rewards are exponential. I'm gathering.
100%, like we've seen the teams in is a 3-day, there's a 3-day factor. Mark was there a few weeks ago when we were running a program with the group of special operators in the cyberspace, and first day, these are people coming from different departments within the government, different skill set, a different level, different clearance, and first day they are all individuals. They know, I don't know if you know about the cyber, but it's very confined, it's very intense, and there's a lot of pressure. Second day, people start to open up. The third day factor, when we've done our Who Are You session, and they had to share some of their stories. They had to laugh, they had to cry, they had to put in these masks to use their body to express themselves. And you create that sacred, safe space for people to open up, and you warm them up, and then you start asking the deeper questions, the one that you're looking for. and then people start sharing their opening their heart to the room, you see that energy, get grounded, and you see you get the goosebumps and people are sharing. And then on that same night, the third night, when we're around the fire and we're unpacking, we're doing after action review, basically our postmortem of the day, you should see the energy in the room. People are close, people are hugging, people are like, oh my God, I didn't know that about you and all that stuff. And that team left more united than any other team that we've seen in a long time. So just to show the power of creating these anchor experience, these moments, because as humans, like I said, we're very complex, we're very different. We all learn differently. So you can't just have one size fits all for everybody and expect the same result from everybody. Okay, we're not building robots here. We are actually just investing time into being a bit more human. And then the reward on that is, I believe people are gonna, when there's time to support and there's gonna be time to push, the more open, the more that your group, you will go a lot further than the group that did not prep for this, because that will fall apart.
In fact, Ben, having been there, I would actually take what you had said a step further in that you're not creating robots. You're actually deprogramming robots. When people achieve a certain level of proficiency by doing their job so well that they can forget how to be human. So connecting the dots with that level of elite expertise, yet emotional access and safe creativity, is mastery at a whole different level.
No, amen to that. That's exactly deprogramming, basically unpacking, unwinding all that things, and just taking one time at a time, one human at a time, one question, and then just be there to really listen to them. Not just he listen, hear them, and support them. And then afterwards, you have a deeper bond together, that's gonna, go forever.
Last question. I know you work with children and you work with young adults, and you work with teams and organizations, and you also work with people like yourself who are at the top of the top, who are the best in their field, and yet they still want to be better. And I would think it's such a fine line, that extra whatever it is, to be not just the best of the best, which they already are, but the best and something else. So what is, I'm curious, like, what is the factor that might take a person from being the best of the best to the best in something else? I don't know how else to describe it.
I think, well, you'll have to start somewhere. And again, starting somewhere is just, I think you with kids and young adults, and actually anybody, is we learn by experiencing something. So I think it's important that when we do these events or these programs, these curriculums, we believe that it needs to be an inspiring environment. And once you got the right environment, and typically we would have done our research and we would have had our interviews and we would have met them a little bit more and see what they're good at, see what there's room to where there are room to improve, where there's certain factors that they're not aware of. And then we kind of build that's the one thing too. We build models around. We call them elite performance model. And that is a model that constantly shifts, but at least it gives you a framework to put you in the middle. And to your point, whether we're going to put a child in the middle or an Olympic athlete or an entrepreneur or a special operator or a team or organization, we put that in the middle. And then we go around the edges, and then we look at these cogs. All right, are they really good physically? Yeah, these guys are in shape. They can do that. Great. Well, we're not going to really push that a little bit because they already got this. Oh, are they really good? Do they have the good nutrition? Are they have all the right supplements? Did we do blood work, blood panel on that? And then, oh yeah, there's a bit of improvement there. Great. So then we'll bring in the subject matter experts for that to really optimize their nutrition. But then what we typically, focus is more on the left side of it, where it's more the softer skill, creativity, problem solving, performing under pressure, X factor, spirituality. And spirituality is not necessarily religion. It's more of like, what is your legacy? What do you want to leave on this planet for, right? So how can we get you achieve that, everybody's going to remember you for this? So once we build these models, then we can then what it does is it shows a foundation and shows a path that then people can start to gravitate and understand where they want to spend time and energy and resource into. Because I believe that that's the one thing. We all want to do something, but if you can't see it, if you don't know the road or the first step forward or the right support, then that's going to stay an idea. And like I said, it's never going to come to play. So the best thing that we can do, and whether you are just starting or whether you are midway through and done a few things and trying to expand and trying to get a little bit better, or you're at the bleeding edge of your performance and you're trying to get that 1%, 0.5% better, is establishing the foundation. Who are you? Where are you? And where do you want to go? And then we can come in and we really support you, like I said, in any of these factors to get your right foot forward with the right support, with the right stories, with the right motivation, in the right environment, with the right subject matter experts for you to really shine and to thrive and take that next step. And then go on and continue on your journey, continue on your path of becoming the best version of yourself.
Nice. Well, Ben Potvin, if somebody wants to work with you and your team to become the best version of themselves, we have a couple links for you and a couple videos at the Life Changes Show page for Ben Potvin. But where do you suggest people start?
I would just say just go to the website, liminalcollective.com, and then there's different contact us. It'll give you a little bit more idea of the different things we can offer, the performance advisors that we have. We're, you know, that's, you know, we're typically the ones behind the curtains, because we believe that the people that we're working with are the stars, and those are the people that we want to put on the pedestal, and we just want to make sure that given the right support, and then we become their cheerleaders to kind of help them really, you know, push, you know, push beyond the everybody's own perceived limits. Because if you can, and if you can see, dream bigger, and you know you're gonna have a support, typically people start running, and then they break their records in no time.
And so it is. Ben, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing as you have. It's been a pleasure listening and talking with you.
Well, thank you, Filippo. Thank you, Mark. And like I said, one thing at a time. If you know. If I we recap a little bit, everybody should just do a little journaling tonight just to say, how was your day? Where did you thrive? Where did you hit some obstacles? And how can you change to make sure tomorrow is a little bit better? And then we're all going to be better humans all together. One love, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. And again, that website is Liminal Collective, LIMINAL collective.com. And I like that. What do you say something about we could have a good day or a learning day or something like that? Like not a bad day, but a learning day. Or that's
Win
how I
and
do it.
learn, win and learn.
Win and learn.
All I know is we're better humans today after for having this show.
Right? And we're more human. And I love that concept. How can we be more human? In other words, like what we were talking about there at the end, take what we already have, what we already do well, what we like about this life experience, and kind of add a next level to it.
Always, always, always another next level. And I think that's the thing that Ben really helps you get to is the fact that there's so much more inside you if you're willing to go for it. Everybody's looking for the solution outside. And yet accessing it inside is so powerful.
Yeah, and it really made me think when I was saying like, how do you get to that? Even if it's, I think he said like 5% more or something like that. Well, he said, look at these other factors. They look at this and they look at that nutrition, they look at spirituality. And I like that. So many people would probably just focus on, I got to be a better this, so I got to do this better and not take the other things into consideration.
Well, I think that's a big part of what's so impressive about not only Ben's work, but Liminal Collective as a whole. And of course, we had talked to Andy Walsh a while back,
Yes.
the founder, the multidisciplinary approach, you know, that the holistic combination of the physical, the mental, the movement, the emotional intelligence, the consistency. It allows you to take a look at things from so many different internal perspectives.
Thank you. Agreed. And with that, let's take a look at our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Janet, and I have finally returned home after many interesting trips around the world. I've had a lot of remembrances of past life experiences in the many countries I've visited. So many of the negative ones brought uncontrollable karmic pain and physical pain. I couldn't walk and had to be hospitalized for months at a time in quite a few of the countries I visited. I'm doing my best to heal from all of my past lives and want to continue to remember others. I need to know if it's possible to review them without going into extreme pain and without creating debilitating illnesses.
Dearest Janet, physical collapse and hospitalization from painful memories are not necessary. I lovingly ask you to remember that years ago, I assisted you in releasing so many negative karmic life experiences, and you didn't experience pain nor create physical challenges. So it is possible to gently review difficult past life memories in ways that reduce the risk of being re-traumatized or producing debilitating symptoms. Of course, we weren't physically in your past life places when we reviewed your experiences. However, if you still want to visit other karmic places, please prepare yourself and make sure that you have someone present who can help you stay centered and focused and calm while reliving your past. Because you previously become physically unable to walk and required hospitalization, those severe physical responses mean you need additional medical or therapeutic support to keep you safe while exploring memory material. And remember, dear Janet, you could also go back to the way you relived the past years ago by having past life sessions with a good therapist instead of choosing to recreate the trauma in the actual places you lived before. Whether that's with me or another therapist or spiritual advisor, you may also want to look at why you are interested in visiting the negative karma from past lives and how it serves you in living your best life now. Are you looking to punish yourself in this life and think you're cleaning up karma, but what you're actually doing is reliving negative past life experiences or potentially even connecting to experiences that are not yours, but that you can embody to punish yourself? You also have not mentioned having had any wonderful experiences in any of your travels that may or may not be karma related. Are you denying yourself the wonderful karma too? These are the kinds of things I can help you explore, or potentially a good therapist or spiritual advisor can do for you as well, and something I feel you may want to consider. I look forward to hearing of your great success and future experiences by choosing to be prepared mentally and spiritually for whatever your experiences bring up.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
Now it's time for our performance guest segment. And we have a singer, guitarist, music producer, Mason Lucas, a.k.a. Don Gatto. Welcome, Don, to the Life Changers Show.
Hello, Filippo and Mark. Thanks so much for having me on.
Our pleasure. We want to thank Colin Martin for having introduced us to you and your music. And now we're going to get to learn a little bit about your story as well, actually. I love how you got into music. Gosh, how did you say it? Not because you were good at it, but because why?
Because I wasn't that bad at it.
Okay, so explain.
Well, the process of elimination. You know, I had the good fortune of growing up middle class in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, my parents did a good job of exposing me to different things. It's not that I liked all those different things. You know, go to a little children's theater show or go to local Zydeco concert or whoever, blues, whoever was coming through town or let's say just all forms of culture. Both the highbrow, the haute couture, as well as the, you know, kind of street, local, lowbrow kind of stuff, and as well as sports and all the other academic things that kids have to take a stab at. And I did well enough academically, but as far as all the extracurriculars, I was pretty unremarkable in a lot of them. And music was one of my less unremarkable ones. I enjoyed it all. You know, it was a good time. I enjoyed the theater. I had some good times with that. But music was the one that I I was not terrible enough at that I had to stop it, and enjoyed it enough to keep going, and here I am.
Interesting how it ended up serving you as you started to connect with, actually, like what Ben was saying, with different cultures and how the music that you learned from them and you shared with them, how that allowed you to learn more about them and yourself even, right?
Oh, he's absolutely right. Yeah, you get some food and some music and some
Right.
movement, and you get the people together. Next thing you know, the language barriers fall away, and you form really meaningful connections through that universal language. A lot of people would say that about music, but I would say dance too, and the movements, other types of the arts. The arts in general are universal.
Well, in some cases, you actually learned the language as well. Tell us about before we hear one of your pieces, and I think it deserves explanation because some of your pieces sound like they would be coming from Peruvian shamans, for example, or Himalayan monks. So tell us about those experiences that will lead to the music.
Yeah, simply put, I've just spent a lot of time with those kind of people. A lot of Peruvian shamans, a lot of Himalayan monks, and as I was on this journey of being kind of a vagabond backpack musician, I would, wander into a town in Guatemala with my backpack and just a couple bucks in my pocket and say, "Well, I have a feeling that if I just start playing guitar here in the plaza, I'm going to make some friends, and suddenly I'm not going to be staying in a hotel or eating in a restaurant. I'm going to be at a friend's house, and their mom is going to be cooking for us while we get some, music together to take out into the plaza and whatnot." And I've always had a kind of a very powerful wanderlust and a desire to travel and move, and I've not been very rooted in one place. I had a very steady home life, real solid upbringing. I think that's a motivator to see if the grass is greener with a different type of lifestyle. And so I've been on the road 17 years. I have been without a home. Recently bought a home, and I have my own bed and a place to be. I feel very content in that. But 17 years, I did not have a place that I called my own, and I just traveled, and through the process of learning about these, different cultures through their music and their traditions, in the end, I learned about myself, which is, I think, a big part of everybody's journey in life.
Well, we're going to get to learn about your music. Also, we're going to get to hear it. Luminoso, what do we need to know before we hear that?
Well, I played a lot of these instruments myself, just overdubbing one over the other. So it sounds like it's a group of people playing, but basically it's just me. And this is a song contemplating the struggle within one's own heart to fully express, to fully embody in this lifetime, bearing in mind that we know that our time is limited. It's finite here. But that when we do leave, we're probably going to go someplace interesting. Hence, I say un destino luminoso, and that's a great word in Spanish, destino. It means destiny, but it also means destination. So I like that play on words.
Nice. Well, we're going to get to hear the first 3.5 minutes of this. Just want to make sure that people get a taste of Luminoso and then they can go find it where your music is available. We'll talk about that in just a moment. This is our, is this as Mason Lucas or is this as Don Gato? Is that part of the project?
Yeah, most people know me as Don Gato,
Don Gato.
or
Okay.
The Gato. Some people call me The Gato. Yeah, that's a nickname that stuck.
Well, here is his pre-recorded piece Luminoso, an edited version here on the Life Changes Show.
Que brama en mi corazón, tiene ganas de escapar como un halcón, anhelando su tierra y su sol, en un mundo fuera de su control. Es un barco en el mar, y la melodía me ayuda a navegar en el océano de noche cuando quiero aterrizar. Al firmamento lo que voy a amar. Sirve no más, y las armas de miedo que ya no tocarás. Hemos dejado de desintegrar con los demás. Lo hace posible este amor, bondad y paz.
Don Gato, Mason Lucas, where can people hear your music?
Spotify, Don Gato, Roman numeral 9, IX.
Okay, well, we have that link at the Life Changes Show page for Mason Lucas, and we also have his Instagram, which is don_gato_IX. So that being said, you have worked with some really interesting people from the Latin American countries, including the United States, in very different capacities. Where do you want to start?
Well, I guess I'll just say, you know, regarding Luminoso, I played that song live at the Envision Festival in Costa Rica 2 years back with my good friend Guadalupe Urbina. Nice. Shout out to Guadalupe, and she's a phenomenon, a cultural figure, a very dear friend of mine who's been a big inspiration to me, and I think maybe likewise as well. We tour, we play together, and so that's one I'm very proud of. But the Lea song from Rising Appalachia, we did a collaboration with Guadalupe during the pandemic when we were in quarantine together, and people can find that online. We had a lot of fun just getting into that creative mode as a way of staying human in a difficult kind of dehumanizing time. And we're fortunately out of that time, but recently I was with Random Rab, a very dear brother of mine who I have a lot of admiration for, who lets me play with him sometimes. We just played at the Meow Wolf installation in Denver, which I was very privileged to take the stage with him there.
Very cool.
Yeah, if anybody hasn't been to, I got no financial stake in it. If anybody wants to get to something very interesting for the family and all the kids or your sweetheart, whatever, Meow Wolf, very interesting. They have very interesting performances there as well.
And speaking of performance, we have Maria Sion with you and Random Rab on our Life Changes show. website page for you.
I hope everybody enjoys it. Yeah, I was very honored to be on that that track. The whole record is beautiful. And we released that on, Rab, technically, he's the man in charge. He released it on vinyl, and we're very happy with the sound quality of that. It just sounds amazing, and I got a lot of appreciation for the MP3s and all the media forms in between, but there's nothing like that. That's sweet, tasty vinyl.
Nice. Yes. Well, before we hear your second song, actually, you had an interesting collaboration with one of the music biggest music producers in the world, I think, here in America, but on a completely different level.
Oh, I think you're referring to my job as a chauffeur. Is that what you're alluding to?
Yes.
Well, for those who don't know, I would say my claim to fame, though it was a humble act of service. I'm very honored to have been Chuck Berry's chauffeur in a period of my life. And just in the New York area, but every time that Chuck would come to New York for a period of time, I had the great privilege of meeting him at the airport and taking him around to his various meetings and social obligations. And I even got to have meals with him sometimes, just he and I, which was really a mind-blowing privilege, you know, for a young guy like myself. I was in my 20s then, and I was able to ask him questions about an era that was absolutely revolutionary before I was even born, when so much of the music that I know and love was created by these masters. And to be in his presence was like sitting with a spiritual master. And I'm an easygoing guy generally, but matter of fact, one time, especially in a restaurant, having worked in them myself, but one time we went into a restaurant together, and he asked to use the restroom before we were seated, and he was dressed in a very casual way, and a server was somewhat dismissive to him and said something like, you know, restrooms for customers only. It's the only time I've ever said to anyone, excuse me, young lady, you have no idea who you're talking to. I'd like to see the manager right now. And just stepped in and intervened on behalf of this cultural hero, this icon, this man who really single-handedly created rock and roll, despite what anybody else might say or think.
Interesting.
God rest your soul in the celestial realms. Thank you very much for the opportunity to bask in your light, my friend. Yeah, good journeys to you.
Interesting how a connection like that could obviously influence somebody's music in many ways. And you have also had many other influences, the Peace Corps. There's a list of like how many people do this. So you studied to be an engineer. How does your music get influenced by all of that together?
I think on the engineering thing, I've always had a bit of a knack for math and science. I love gizmos. I'm in my studio right now, and I'm just looking at my pedal boards. I build my own pedal boards, and I just love the way they look. You know, I might not play one of them for a month or so. I just love all that stuff, you know. So I like geeking out on it. And when I produce like that track that we just listened to, Luminoso, those are all folkloric instruments except for an electric bass, but essentially there's nothing less than 75 years of recent history on there. That's all old stuff, wooden flutes and Spanish guitar and such. But the way I produce it is the way I might produce a rap record or electronic song, and I enjoy that aspect of how technology merges with the art form. That's definitely something. Yeah.
And obviously your time in the Amazon and experiencing indigenous traditions and all of that.
Yeah, it's changed my ear for music. I think more than anything, I have become aware that music is not just entertainment. Music is what we're putting out to the universe, and we're putting it out on a large scale, and all of our friends and fellow human beings who listen to these things, they're going to be influenced. And it's like you were saying at the beginning of the show, the things that we repeat in our mind, music becomes like a mantra. And so through my journey of self-discovery and spiritual practice, there's more of a practice of taking ownership for what I say and what I put out into the world, because I realize those are going to be the mantras for other people. And I very much believe in the alchemy of the artistic process, where we might be upset about something, or we might be feeling sad, but that's just energy, and we can channel any kind of energy through the aperture of the creative process to create whatever we want. We're creating beauty, really. We're co-creating. It's an act of co-creation, but we're also we're programming. And so that's why the big shift for me was getting away from lyrics which were written in a sort of a haphazard way, maybe because other artists might do that and say, oh, you know, if I'm feeling sad, I write a song and say, oh, I'm so sad. But actually, we can feel sad and say, I'm going to sing a song now that says, I know happiness is just a moment away. Right.
Oh,
and
wow.
we're being honest, but we're also engaging in this act of alchemy and then taking more ownership, more responsibility for our impact as artists.
Wow. Na que trascienda. That's the next song we're going to hear. What is that mean? And what is that about?
Nada que trascienda.
Nada que. Okay.
Yes. And you're pretty good. Your French was good early on.
Okay,
and your Spanish
you.
Is spot on too, sir. Nada que trascienda. It means there is nothing to transcend. There's nothing to transcend. We're just going to hear the introductory part here. But I like this because it showcases what I do with a steel string acoustic guitar, which is an old instrument. Matter of fact, this guitar was given to me by my mother. It's a guitar I've had my whole life. I've been playing this guitar for 35 years, and it's been rebuilt 3 times. And I do something with it that I think is unique. And that's what artists are going for, is to take the old paintbrushes, to take the old canvas and say, I'm gonna do it my own way. Yeah.
Is this a sentimental thing about the guitar, or it's just that good, or
both?
Nice.
Yeah, it's a 63 Gibson J45. If for anybody who's listening, I'm only the third owner, and it's just in the shop. I just picked it up again today, matter of fact, from the shop.
Well, mazel tov. Okay, so with that, here is Mason Lucas, or otherwise known as Don Gato, and an excerpt of Nada Que Trascienda, pre-recorded here on the Life Changes Show. Thank you. Yeah, we get it. Mason Lucas, Don Gato, where can they hear the rest of that?
That's on Spotify. That's on the same record as Luminoso. Yeah, Spotify. Don Gato IX.
IX for nine, huh?
Yeah, it also turns out to mean jaguar in Quiche Maya. So it's sort of convenient. And then in some Middle Eastern languages, it means love.
IX?
Yeah, Ishq.
Ishq. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting. So. Well, we've come to that time where we have to say until next time. But before we do, I'm intrigued, and I think it would be a lovely way to end if I have an inkling of what you're going to say. What is your daily implementation of the practice of compassion?
I think that's the greatest challenge in life, really, is to feel what we feel, to believe what we believe, and to not take it personally. And like Ben was saying earlier, every day is either a win or a learning experience. And I think once we start getting around in the world and meeting some people and getting to know our own, let's say our own negative side, realize we're all in this together, and we don't have the ability to change what other people are doing. We only have the ability to take ownership for what we're doing and how it can improve what's going on, and recognize everybody else is in that same situation. Everybody's doing the best they can. We are only human, predominantly human. and so we have this opportunity to give people the benefit of the doubt. I'd say couple that compassion with discernment. Yes, with a healthy dose of discernment.
Very good. What a pleasure to get to know you a little bit here, Mason. Thank you so much for sharing your stories and your music and your passion. Looking forward to the next time we connect.
My pleasure, Filippo. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me on the show.
Our pleasure. And with a big thank you to Mason Lucas, otherwise known as Don Gato, and a big thank you to our interview guest, Ben Potvin. This is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, and along with all of our family here at the Life Changes Show, we thank you for being here with us and remind you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.